Today's guest is Dr. Tammy Berry. And Dr. Berry, although she said I could call her Tammy, so we'll just call her Tammy. But yes, she has a story about burnout and addiction that derailed her life as a successful surgeon. And I enjoyed this conversation. We went longer than normal. So I'll keep this intro short, but it is fascinating. And I think it's going to really resonate with you, my listener, because we all have stress in our lives, some more than others. And she talks, and it's so great to get her perspective as a doctor. But a lot of doctors, you know, they just don't treat us for stress. They treat us for the problem from the stress, not the root of the problem, which is the stress. And so she actually talks about the symptoms. And if you are having any of these symptoms, you need to pay attention because your health is at risk big time. And as she says, and she's like a crusader to, you know, get to the bottom of this epidemic, which it really is, that how, and she talks a little bit in medical terms, but it was in such a way that I understood and I loved. So you're going to learn about the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system and how they play together. And it makes total sense. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Please reach out if it made an impact on you. So I can let her know, but it's a great one. So enjoy.
Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And today my guest is Tammy Berry. And Tammy has an interesting backstory because she is a former surgeon. And she's a general surgeon. So I think that's the hardest kind because you have to know so much about the human body. But yeah, she is now an internationally recognized stress resilience expert. And I am so excited because, I mean, she's a bit younger than a lot of my guests. And so she's in her early 40s. But I think not only she's still midlife, right? But I think what she does is so important. And I think we all, no matter who we are, we carry stress at some point in our lives. Some people who are listening might be more stressed out right now and some might not. But I also, and I'm interested to hear what you have to say, but what sometimes stress is not, you don't even know you have it, but it's there. And so I'd love to hear you talk about that, but welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Laurie. I'm happy to be here.
And do I call you Dr. Berry or Dr. Tammy or?
You can call me Tammy. It's fine.
Call you Tammy. I was like, I started to like pause when I, yeah. all right. And so why don't you just share your backstory, you know, how you came to be a surgeon in the first place, and then what led you to do something different. And a lot of times it's our life path, right? And so it sounds like, you know, we talked before we hit record, and I'm sure it's going to be really helpful for people to hear about it.
Yeah. Thank you. I hope so. I mean, this is sort of why I go about sharing it at all, is because I do think that certainly there maybe aren't a lot of people that are surgeons, and certainly maybe not too many that are female surgeons. But I think that the storyline that sort of threads through my life is very common amongst women in general, and really people, I want to say, you know, like at a very young age, I was always interested in science. I always excelled when it came to school. I was the one who, like, the kids were I was kind of on the popular side, I think also because I was happy to share my exam answers with the kids next to me. You know, it was like everybody was trying to sit next to Tammy, you know, when it came to test time.
Well, smart girls are always popular with both sexes, right? Because the guys like smart girls too. So
they do. And so, you know, school came easy to me. It was, and I enjoyed it very much. I went, I went on to undergrad, I went on to some graduate school, thinking that at the time, actually, I studied immunology and thought I would be interested in just sort of benchwork science. And then there was this grant writing process. I don't know if any of your listeners know about that, but that is basically you have to continually apply for grant money to support your life's work. And it could be cut off at any time with, you know, NIH funding or other government funding. And I realized very quickly that this was not going to be my life's path. And so I had entertained the idea of medical school before, and then to actually, you know, pay for my graduate school, I was teaching physiology and anatomy to medical students at the University of Wisconsin. And then I kind of realized, well, if I can be teaching their curriculum to them, I could probably be one. And shortly thereafter, I did matriculate into medical school. And there I fell in love with surgery. I just thought it was the coolest thing and really fell in love with cardiothoracic surgery initially. And kind of all along the way, I was getting signals from the medical community like, you don't really want to do this. You're too nice for surgery. This isn't really for you. It's really a man's field. You know, this kind of messaging was certainly not subtle. And I went for it anyways, because I couldn't imagine the idea of actually chronically medicating people. It actually went against like some core fundamental values that I have.
Well, let me ask you, because when you say you were too kind for it, I think that doctors in general, that should be something that's required of them, to be kind. So was it just cutthroat? What did you mean?
I wonder if they could sense something that I didn't. And maybe when they were saying you're too kind, what they maybe would have, if they had said you're too sensitive, I maybe would have been able to understand that language. And I could have then found the support I needed to navigate that territory. And I loved surgery. Like it was like a second, it was as if I had been there before. I could navigate around an abdomen
like I'm on the verge of fainting just from you saying that. I mean, I cannot handle anything medical surgery. I'm like, I faint.
But, okay, well, stay with
me. I had a bad experience when I was a kid. So I think it's a brain thing, but I admire so much people like EMTs, and my ex-husband was a police officer and he saw some horrible stuff, you know?
Well, I think that's harder. Yeah. To be honest, I think to be a first responder, like an EMT or firefighter or anybody that's going into somebody's home, there's so much there that is about their humanity and their humanness and their lived experience. Whereas as a surgeon, I'm either meeting you in the emergency room, sometimes straight into the operating room, or I've maybe met you in office hours, and it's a very controlled environment, right? Like I'm kind of very focused on fixing the problem. Whereas I think when you're in the field, there's all of these other it's a different visceral experience, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
So
yeah.
I can see that being harder in some ways. Yeah. And so, you know, I went about my surgical training, and it was certainly hard. You know, I'm not going to pretend that it wasn't hard. I think what was harder for me was there was so much cultural sickness in the healthcare culture. And there's a lot of shaming and silencing and competition. And it's very interesting because to get to this point, a lot of, you know, you had to be competitive. You had to be at the top of your class. You had to be, you had to test very highly on board, you know, exams to get into medical school. Then actually from medical school to residency, it's a very competitive to land your, you know, I somehow got my first choice residency slot, which is a little bit of a miracle. And, you know, so all along the way, there's competition, striving, proving yourself, proving your worth. And then you get into this environment and that doesn't just go away. You know, like it would be beautiful if there was more of a collaborative energy to the culture of medicine in general. And in some respects, it's there, and in some respects, it's not. But I really found that I was overwhelmingly stressed, and that I had for many, many years used stress as fuel, as a motivating factor in my life, and it had carried me very far. And somewhere along the line, that stress became a manipulator. It started to manipulate my thoughts. My thoughts became increasingly negative. It started to manipulate my emotions. My emotions became increasingly dark. And now because I didn't know how to navigate that territory, I didn't understand this is like a nervous system disruption. This was at the end of 2012. And so it was before the language of burnout, you know, that we really do understand now is like a nervous system disruption and dysregulation of the brain and the body at a very fundamental level. And I basically internalized all of that and thought something is wrong with me, instead of recognizing that it was the broader system that I was a part of, and that I was internalizing these things, that I was internalizing the stress rather than processing it. And from both my cultural conditioning, my lineage, I sort of turned against myself. And what had become very constructive energy, my stress used to be very constructive energy, it very quickly became destructive energy. And I was drinking a lot, and I was self-medicating with amphetamines, which are uppers, to kind of keep myself going. I was fighting off depression. I was fighting off a whole host of anxiety. I had at one point ended up in the hospital thinking I was having a heart attack. Like that's how, I mean, I couldn't breathe. It was this crushing sensation on my chest. I literally thought I was dying, to find out like, oh, this, you're fine. You know, like there's no biological, physiologic problem here. You just have anxiety. And I remember feeling like that can't be right.
Yeah.
And that was really my first window into how powerful the mind and the body, how interconnected and how powerful the mind and the body are together.
Yeah. I had a period of anxiety attacks when I was an executive at AOL, and I got to the point where, and looking back now and knowing what I know it was just because I wasn't aligned with what I was supposed to be doing. And I felt like kind of in a square peg and around, you know, try to put a, whatever that saying is.
I know what you're saying.
A round hole. But yeah, I'm somebody who likes control. And so to feel so out of control and to know that you don't even have any idea of when it's coming, it just can hit you. I mean, I was in front of a big conference room full of people and I was speaking, and I had to run out of the room. And, you know, and then explain that later in some shape that I thought that they would, you know, that they wouldn't think it was like really me with a panic attack, you know? So in an interview once, you know, I was interviewing for a job because it lingered. I didn't have them all the time, but I would have them in these moments where I think my brain just wanted to shut down. And I think it was almost like, and when I think about the situations I was in when it was happening, it was where I didn't want to be. I was not aligned with what I was trying to get a job that I really didn't want, but I needed the money. You know, I was in a job that I didn't really feel that I, you know, was making value or connected with, or I was competent enough for, honestly. And so, yeah, I was determined to conquer that. And I'm so glad. Well, I think, you know, just being in alignment is a big antidote for that.
It certainly is. I would definitely agree with that. And along those lines, I think maybe because I had such a severe case of burnout when I finally did leave medicine, but in my experience, I now recognize that if we're not properly taking care of ourselves, that burnout can be something that is like remitting and relapsing. It just sort of keeps coming back. And that phenomenon is there because there's a fundamental part of ourselves that still needs to be reconciled. So like you were saying about alignment, like, are we living our purpose, sort of is what I drew mm-hmm. from what you were sharing, which I think is spot on. I think also if we have a relationship with ourselves that is not fundamentally rooted in respect, in care, honestly, in love, right? We need to be loving ourselves, or we can tend to be in, if our dynamic with ourselves is that we're going to force ourselves to show up, suit up, and perform in certain capacities, but we're doing it from a position of demand and control versus respect and honor. Mm. I think that we send messages, you know, the mind is literally controlling the body, and the body is not here to be a servant. It really isn't. And we oftentimes, I think, have this relationship with our bodies. Like, I even still hear from people like, oh, I'll sleep when I'm dead. Like, really? That's when you're going to rest? It's like, you need to rest now, you know, like rest now, replenish yourself now so that you can be at your best in whatever it is that you want to be bringing yourself to. And the nervous system is the massive communicator. We don't recognize it a lot. We talk a lot about mind and body, and I think it's wonderful that that's common language now. People understand that if I'm not directing my mind effectively, that I can experience manifestations in my body. I think we get that. I think the missing piece is we don't understand that it's through the nervous system that that communication takes place. Mm-hmm. Right?
So funny. So, I had a chiropractic appointment this morning mm-hmm. and, you know, I hadn't been since October, and I usually go because I get out of alignment very easily. And, you know, she just said that over again, because it's like, and the other thing is I'm doing a cleanse. So this is like day three. And so she said, it's so good that you came during a cleanse, because, you know, that your nervous system needs to speak to your body. And, I was like, oh, well, I didn't even know. That's a good thing I came. But yeah. When you say the nervous system, I think about like how much chiropractic work has helped me connect kind of like my brain to my body, mm-hmm. because I've been out of alignment, and it's like not my whole bottom half hurts so bad. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even find that until I was like 50. I was about 50 when I found chiropractic work. Mm-hmm. So, and it was only because a chiropractor saw me limping on the sidelines of a rugby game. And so she was like, you need to come in and see me. But yeah. So people don't realize, you know, that there's a whole physiological thing going on there.
Totally.
You need to have that connection and the flow of the spinal fluid that goes from your brain down. But yeah. So,
and there are many ways to do that. You know, like, I love that you found chiropractics. You know, some people find acupuncture, acupressure. There are different I love floating.
Oh,
floating,
I love that.
My favorite thing, you know, that really does help relax all of the muscles that would impinge, you know, that would prevent the nervous system from flowing unimpeded. I actually work specifically with clients to strengthen. So we have two branches of our nervous system. We have the sympathetic nervous system, which is responsible for the fight, flight, freeze, fawn response, which you described beautifully when you were experiencing your anxiety or your panic attacks, right? And then we have the parasympathetic nervous system, para meaning adjacent to the sympathetic nervous system. We're so beautifully designed. We are so exquisitely, beautifully designed. So these two systems work is a checks and balances, if you will. And that when the sympathetic nervous system is in activation, we become rebalanced. We rebalance our whole bodies, or we come back to baseline because of the action of the parasympathetic nervous system. So that works in balance if we let it. So this part of the nervous system can be overrode by the brain. And when the brain is in a perpetual state of stress, which can very easily happen in modern life right now.
Yeah, just from listening to the news.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Even before that, yeah. Like it's really one of these things that when we're in a state of stress, the brain is primed to survey the environment for more stress. The brain has this uncanny ability to find exactly what it's looking for. Unless we are aware of this tendency and we disrupt it, right? So the brain is looking for danger. And if you don't see it in your immediate environment, chances are you're going to find it from your phone, from your social media, from your TV, from your you're going to be checking, right? You're checking now to be sure that everything is safe. Really, you're checking to make sure that to know where there's danger, and you're going to find it, which just keeps activating the sympathetic nervous system. So when that is happening, we now know, so we're designed to spend 5% of our waking hours in a sympathetic state. It's actually good for us. It's like revving. It's like revving your car on the highway. It actually flushes the tubes and the systems, and it's good for the engine, right? It's like, put the pedal to the metal, baby, for a few minutes, make sure there's no cops around.
And what would that be like for 5 minutes doing what? Is exercise an example, or what is it?
Well, no, because so when we're talking about, when I'm talking about this kind of sympathetic state activation, I'm talking about from real danger. So we're designed,
you want to be afraid for 5 minutes every day. Is that
so? What we're designed to be afraid for up to 5 minutes a day, but what we're 5% of our day, 5% of our waking hours.
Okay.
So, but what we know now is that, and this was actually a statistic from 2019. So this is pre-COVID. The numbers are much, much higher, but that the average American was spending 70% of their waking hours in a moderate to high level of stress. Okay. Now,
65% more than
it's not good. Yeah. It's not good. So what the endpoint is of sympathetic nervous system activation is systemic inflammation in the body.
Yes.
Inflammation is the root of all disease. Every single disease process, from Alzheimer's to diabetes to heart disease to atherosclerosis to cancer to all of it. Okay. So this is actually a healthcare crisis that we spend this much time in a state of stress.
I don't think doctors, like most doctors, I don't think really they don't advise you on that. Really. I got a pain in my whatever, and oh, let me give you some medicine for that pain in your whatever. And there's nothing to address the root and what is going on. And so,
because so much of this stress is actually then if we are not living in situational stress right now, we are blessed. We live in a country that is free of war. Like, we have psychological stress. We have mental stress that is perpetuated over and over and over again. It's really important to note yes. This is what I'm talking about, right? Because situational stress is very different and usually highly adaptive and critical to our survival. This stress that just keeps perpetuating and going on and going on and going on is us not being aware of what's really taking place, because you're right. The medical community is largely unaware that this is taking place. And I've had to spend the last decade studying this to really understand what's taking place. I'm truly a leader. From a medical healthcare perspective, I'm truly a leader. I mean, I'm the first person to coin sympathetic syndrome as a state of massive nervous system and organ system dysfunction and dysregulation as a byproduct of stress. I'm not that smart, you know, like I'm just aware. I'm just using my lived experience and my experience in working with other people who are training their nervous systems to be highly resilient in the face of incredible levels of stress. And it has allowed me this incredible opportunity to have a window of insight into how magnificent our human bodies are, how magnificently we're designed, and how critically important it is for us to understand how the nervous system, how the brain, how they function, and why that's important, particularly if we want to live anything close to healthy, happy, and successful lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is so fascinating. So one of my questions is that I think, you know, because stress is kind of invisible.
Yes.
We think we're doing fine. How does somebody know? What are the signs that somebody is with a sympathetic syndrome thing, which is, mm-hmm. I love having a name for it, you know?
Yeah.
Where you're operating from that too much of your day.
Yeah. No, that is so great. So there's a few things. There's really four common signs that we are in, that the mind is in chronic stress. Okay. So I want to break it up into mind manifestations and body manifestations to just help the audience kind of figure out where they fall on this.
Got it.
So the four most common mind manifestations would be time shortage consciousness, because we're biologically wired that if we're in stress, we need to act fast. We need to act now, because the biological systems that we're running on are very reptilian in nature. And it was how we survived to pull ourselves out of the food chain, right? So at one point we were in the food chain.
That's right. And just why our brain developed that way, right?
Right, exactly. If we didn't have that capacity, we would still be in the food chain. Yes. So that's one thing, right? Everything has to happen fast. We feel rushed. We feel hurried. We never have enough time to get anything done. That's one sign that your mind is experiencing excessive levels of stress. The second sign is we become really consumed in our environment, and we're constantly surveying it for danger, but also flaws. So if you're able to go around and unfortunately for us, our families, our spouses, our children tend to be or maybe our coworkers or our employees, colleagues, we see everything that's wrong in everybody else. We see every defect, everything that they could be, ought to be, should be doing differently that would improve our lives. Right? Because now they're the source of stress, right? So it makes us incredibly critical of other people.
So would that fall under the judgment realm?
Judgment, yes.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. So there's external judgment.
Overwhelm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one of them is judgment of others and your surroundings. Like, this place isn't good enough. You know, everybody's redoing their homes, right? Well, we're spending so much time there. But the third one is judgment of self. We become very hypercritical of ourselves, and our self-talk can become incredibly harsh. We would never say these things to another person, and we are caught continually saying them to ourselves. And it particularly is related to body image, whether you're male or female, interestingly enough. I think women kind of think like we're the only ones that have body image issues, and it's not true. We're just okay talking about it.
That's why they have steroids. I mean, is, you know,
yes, this happens across the board.
That's the guy version, right?
Yeah. And the fourth one is, oh my gosh, I just blinked. So the first one is time shortage consciousness. Then we have judgment of others. We have judgment of ourselves. And then the fourth one is a propensity for negative or catastrophic thinking. So trying to continually plan for the worst possible scenario, which then fuels more stress. So all of these things end up being a self-perpetuating cycle, because you can always find something that isn't quote unquote good, right? And then we find more reasons to be stressed. And so it's really important for us to recognize, like, those are the common mind manifestations of chronic stress. And when you're experiencing them, let me just give your audience, like, okay, so if I'm experiencing this, a really good thing to do is to recognize, oh my gosh, isn't that so interesting? I was just in a stress response. Like, this is me just, because they become habits. They also become habits. And so we want to break that mind habit, right? There's a neural network that's being activated again and again and again. And as soon as you become aware of the fact that you're running on that neural network, you're already breaking free of it. And to the more kindly you do so, the more you're going to be able to free yourself from that rut, really, that mental rut. So I advocate pet names, you know, like, oh, love that, like, you're stressing yourself out, like, or this is just a sign of you being stressed. Take a deep breath. Settle down. Now redirect yourself. There are some quick ways to activate the parasympathetic nervous system, which would be like humming, gargling would be another one, full on singing. If you're in a place where, you know, if you're in the car, instead of yelling, sing, baby, you know, so those are quick ways of activating the parasympathetic nervous system, or even like tapping on the chest, on the breastbone. You can kind of feel that there's a pressure point there that activates the parasympathetic nervous system. That's a good way of calming down. So
that's why tapping
mm-hmm.
is, a, yeah,
that you activates.
Know, I've the not parasympathetic done that, nervous. But I've had, people explain it to me. So
yeah. No, that. I've used tapping and I still do sometimes, because it is a powerful regulator of the parasympathetic nervous system.
Is it just a kind of a way to distract the brain? You know, when I think of singing and humming and gargling, it's just like kind of takes you away from those thoughts in a way.
So possibly, but what it really does is that it activates the parasympathetic nervous system. And what's interesting is that 80% of the communication within the nervous system and the brain is actually bidirectional. We classically thought that everything's originating in the mind. It's coming down the spinal cord to the periphery, you know, through the nerves to the periphery. And that's largely true, but 80% of the time that communication is going back and forth. So if you access the parasympathetic nervous system, when you access the parasympathetic nervous system from anywhere in the body, it's feeding back a signal to the brain that calms down your own neural networks, that helps you resource the brain to the prefrontal cortex. This is what the parasympathetic nervous system is brilliant at, taking us out of our primal regions of the brain, which are very emotional and territorial and defensive and aggressive, and moving us into our cortex, which is responsible for belonging and love and joy and complex decision making and thought formation, creativity. Right? All of out of the box solutions, the things that we really want in our life are not compatible with a sympathetic state. So this is why it becomes so important to anybody that wants to live a truly inspired, creative life as well.
I just have to tell you, this is so valuable. I mean, I'm just sitting here like enjoying all of this because I just know how helpful it is. And you have been able to simplify it. You know, it's like people think, you know, they hear these words about, you know, names, parasympathetic and sympathetic. But when you use examples and you explain it and the way you've explained it, it's like so helpful. They will be able to actually apply some of this from listening to this episode.
That's my hope. Like, I want everybody to find freedom from this because it literally is a prison. You become imprisoned by stress in your mind and your body, and it is making you so sick. It's destroying marriages. It's destroying people's health. It's destroying our relationship with our kids. You know, right now we have, and this was actually a statistic from 2019 as well, that we have 25% of our children aged 13 to 18 with diagnosable anxiety in America right now. Now, this is a sign of anxiety in the parents. And this is not about shame or blame. I want to make that very clear. If there's anybody listening to this that has children that are experiencing anxiety or stress-based disorders, it is not your fault. You are simply doing the best you can with what you've got. I want you to be armed with better. That's it. Mm-hmm. When we have nervous system regulation, which is what I teach my clients, they have what's called coherence. Okay. Coherent heart and brain. When we have heart brain coherence, we have a very strong nervous system. And that's what our children are using up until the time that they're 22 years of age, which is fascinating. Our children need our nervous systems to regulate their own. And their nervous system is required for their ability to process complex thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And if they can't borrow ours, then they suffer. When they're trying to co-regulate on an anxious or nervous nervous system, they become anxious.
And that's just the typical modeling, right? Even though you don't realize you're modeling it.
You don't realize. So for some people, I've had clients come to me because their children are developing anxiety disorders. And they realize, like, I've got to do something about this. I know I'm anxious because I see my children demonstrating the same anxiety, the nail biting, and they have these same anxiety related behaviors that I do. And they only see it because they see it in their children. Mm-hmm. And we would do anything for our kids. I mean, I get it. It's almost like I won't really take that good care of myself, but if I know it's going to save my children, then I will. I mean, we're kind of like that, unfortunately.
Well, I just want to go back to the 4 points you made that those are, and that's invisible until you, like you said, awareness is the first step. And yeah, if any of these things, if you're listening and any of these things, you feel that you're applying these in your life, then you're stressed, right? That's kind of the message.
Yes. Yeah. And then in the body. So common signs of stress are actually like anxiety is a manifestation in the physical body.
Like a panic attack.
A panic attack.
Yeah.
Sweaty palms, constriction in your throat, a tightness in your chest, high blood pressure. I've actually had several clients come to me because they've been told if they don't get their blood pressure out of control, like I had a woman who was only 35 years old who had such high blood pressure that medication couldn't get it under control. And they said, you have got to figure out this stress. Like you have got to do something. And she reached out to me and thankfully she did, you know, because high blood pressure is a very common sign, headaches, brain fog, aches and pains, like in the upper neck, jaw grinding. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I've had that. Like that was one of my first signs.
What about migraines? Because I know sometimes they're a real thing.
Yeah, sometimes migraines can be tricky because there can be a lot. There also can be dietary links to migraines, such as dairy or gluten. And so migraines are a little bit of a tricky, you know, thing there. But certainly, yes, I have had clients who have had stress-based migraines that improved.
Mm-hmm. Probably diarrhea.
Yes.
One? Yes. I had that when my ex-husband had an affair. I had diarrhea for 3 weeks and I was I crying and all that. But then after like a week, I was like, okay, I can get through this, you know, I'm good. And so, but I was a front or something because I couldn't stop the diarrhea. And I was like, I don't understand why this is happening to me. So that's how I know how invisible it can be, even in the body when you don't even realize it. So
I also want to make a point here because we can have this tendency to want to really control the body and its experiences. I also make sure I coach my clients on recognizing some of these responses are incredibly beneficial. So like in the instance of I'm processing this emotional pain, and this is a manifestation of this. I always want us to be incredibly respectful of the physical body and this physical experience, because like you were saying, you recognize that you could get through it and that it is a teacher. It is here to teach us things about ourselves, it is here to point us to new ways of thinking and being with ourselves and with others in this world that's different than the way we are currently seeing ourselves or seeing others. I don't want to miss that point because I think it's really important.
Oh, and I that is so true, because now that you say that, it made me take better care of myself in that period. It made me say, you know, I don't feel it. I don't think it, but my body is showing it. And so,
and I better pay attention. Yeah. So I need to pay attention.
Yeah.
Yes. So if we're not going to pay attention when the mind is cueing us to pay attention, and by mind, I also mean our feelings and our emotions. So feelings and emotions would be like frustration, depletion, defeat, tiredness.
Yeah. A lot of hypervigilance. People say I'm exhausted.
Exhausted. Hypervigilance, right? Feeling kind of always on edge and always waiting for the next shoe to drop. Okay. Those are feelings and some emotional states that are signs of stress. Okay. So we got mind symptoms. We got some feeling and emotion symptoms. If we don't pay attention there, then they're going to show up in the body. Hmm. Right. And they can show up in every organ because the nervous system touches every organ of the body, right? From the liver to the small intestines, to the large intestines, to the stomach, to the kidneys, to the adrenal gland, right? All of it, everything, down to the level of your DNA, okay? When we are living in a state of chronic stress, we alter the entire machinery of the human body, and we are producing stress-based hormones and proteins.
So I birthed my children when I was under stress. So what did I hand to them? Now that makes me feel bad.
Don't, because we're incredibly resilient. That stuff clears quickly. It really does. We can always repattern and reprogram. That is the skill that we've been born with. Mm-hmm. There is nothing that is preordained. You aren't even, your genetic code doesn't even determine what will be expressed. Like you have so much power. We have so much power in this moment to shift out of a state of stress and into a state of resilience. This is what I call resilience. Stress resilience is being able to recognize when you're in a state of stress and having the skills and the ability to shift yourself into a state of resilience. And this happens at a biochemical level. This happens in your nervous system, in your brain, in your physiology, in your biology, all the way down to your genetic code.
Mm. Yeah, this is fascinating. I think we got to wrap up, but I would love to have you back and talk about more stuff, because one question I have, and I know that could take probably another 20 minutes, is what's your opinion about autoimmune disease as it relates to stress? And because I had that, but I recovered.
Yeah, definitely related.
Many years. Yeah. But this has been so fascinating, but it could be a very controversial topic.
It all is.
Yeah, because it's a big part of a lot of people's identity. And they carry around that autoimmune disease, like, you know, it's, and I think, you know, there's a lot of things that if people just opened up their mind to what they could learn and what they could solve, mm-hmm. and be really open-minded instead of, you want to say something.
I want to say, before we become identified with any disease state, we tend to become identified with stress. Mm. If you're part of modern day society, you've been somehow culturally conditioned into believing that if you're not stressed, hustling, striving, pushing hard and harder and harder, then you're somehow lazy. And I want to turn that upside down, because of that mindset, that identity, that if we aren't somehow hustling and proving ourselves and productive, this idea that our worth is linked to what's in our bank accounts has us very, very sick people. And I want to bring us back to that it's our being that is sacred. It is our being, that it is the fact that we exist that makes us worthy. And that if we can align ourselves in our wholeness, we've been exquisitely designed. There's an intelligence to this human body. And it is not, I mean, I see this as a sign of an incredible infinite intelligence, that we have both a sympathetic and a parasympathetic nervous system, and that this is continually guiding us through our feelings and our emotions. I mean, these are our signals. It's the body is manifesting these signs as a way to say, you have neglected your parasympathetic nervous system. Mm. When we are parasympathetic dominant, we are able to access things like intuition and creative energies. Mm. And the electromagnetic field of the heart is actually 3 times larger than it is when we're stressed. It is a life-affirming state. And that is so life-affirming that it's the benefit that we bring to other beings, other members of our species along with us. This is not an accident, right? Yeah. Nothing happens on accident. These are things that I want to really bring together the science and spiritual dimension of what it is to be a human being, and recognize that we've got a capacity that we're not even aware of, that's waiting for us to tap into.
Mm. Yeah. 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 And a lot of people that I talk to on my podcast who had these like life pivot moments was due to a health crisis of some sort, where they finally stopped and paid attention to whatever that stress was that was causing this health crisis ultimately.
Yes.
And found something that was not stressful anymore.
Right. And there are here, I mean, this is why I'm so passionate about this work, because the more people that, and burnout, I'm really passionate about burnout, because for me, it was burnout that brought me to my knees and had me realize, oh my God, I'm addicted to stress. Here, I thought I was addicted to alcohol and gambling and shopping and pills. And no, the thing I was addicted to was stress that fueled all of that.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned before we hit record that you're type A, and that I always considered that, you know, was, I labeled myself that too. And I wore it like, you know, a medal, you know, I'm type A, that's great. And, you know, I thrived on deadlines. I was in a very deadline. I was in a software development company, and we always had to get the launch ready for the deadline. And so it was a very hustle crisis type of environment. So yeah, of course, I guess I was addicted to it. So, and I often say, and I really need to pay attention to this more, and maybe this is a sign I need to do this by you being here. But I tend to say to myself, I work better under a deadline, and I need to change that kind of, you know, that mental state that I believe that.
Yeah.
You know, it's because it's not true.
It's not true. Exactly. Yeah,
it's not true. It's a limiting belief. So anyways, well, thanks. Yes. Thanks so much. Is there any last, you know, I do love to end by, you know, what is not your average life mean to you?
That is such a good question. And I think for me, truly, I think we all have an invitation of where are we hiding our uniqueness? Like, where are we trying to be average? And I think we've been conditioned to be as average as possible. And I think we, particularly your audience, I have a feeling, are change agents and leaders. And these are people who want more for their lives and themselves. And this is the moment where we go, okay, what is it that makes me not average? And how can I do more of that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I have a lot of listeners who are that, but I think I also have a lot of listeners who want to be change agents.
We all are.
But they know they can deep down inside, but they just haven't, you know.
Yeah. Hey, if you're freezing, if you're listening to this and you're going, wow, yeah, Lori just nailed me. Like, she knows her audience and I'm one of those. I want you to also recognize that that can be a stress response too. That part of this whole constellation of fight or freeze, fight. I'm a fighter. I can get really aggressive in my relationships. I can get snarky. I can get self-righteous. It's not cute. I can also manifest in freeze, which is procrastination, putting things off, saying I'm confused or I'm uncertain about something. It's actually a stress response. Fawning is people pleasing, always trying to make sure everybody around you, nobody's stressed out around you, right? Because that might stress you out.
And so are you saying it kind of falls under that judging, being critical of yourself type of thing? Is it? Yeah.
That those are all common manifestations of being in a stress response.
Yeah.
That we can act by fighting, freezing, fleeing, running away, right? Just avoid that, right? Yeah. Or fawning, which is we really dote on everybody. I can do all of those, right? I can do all of those in a day. You know, it's like
and that's interesting. And it's, I've never heard that. Fawning.
Oh yeah, fawning. Mm. Yeah. Well, these are new. We're pioneering things here, Lori. Yeah, we're at the leading edge of
what you're doing. I mean, it's great work, and you know, you dumb it down. I will say you so articulate and explain it. And I just know you're going to help a lot of people. So thank you. And thank you for being here for my listeners.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.